from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
This is The Blitz. The first look at the top stories in Seattle sports.
Come on, we need big energy. Let's go. We're just getting warmed up.
The rundown on everything Seattle sports on your way to work.
Swing and a fly ball. Deep right center field. He did it again.
And the stories everyone is talking about.
Russell takes the time. Looks over the top. He's got him in.
Let's go. Let's go to work.
This is The Blitz at 6.
Come on.
Good morning, friends. Welcome to the Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you Friday, October 18th. Happy Blue Friday. Hopefully you got your jerseys out. Maybe hopefully you're sleeping in today. I don't know. Getting ready for the Ravens to come to town on Sunday. The return of Earl Thomas. Maybe you're one of the fans who has mixed feelings about the return of Earl. Plenty of people going to cheer on Sunday. Some people not, judging by the reaction on Twitter yesterday. But here's the thing. His teammates, his coaches have no mixed feelings about it. They'll be happy to see Earl, although maybe not so happy to play against him. It's just not a comfortable feeling. We'll hear from Russell Wilson on being Earl's teammate, being his friend, and why, yeah, he doesn't really want to play against him on Sunday. We'll also hear about how these two teams match up. A lot of similarities between the two, but who has the edge on offense? Who has the edge on defense? An update on the injury report as well for you. The Chiefs beat the Broncos last night on Thursday Night Football, but if you're watching, also a devastating injury to Patrick Mahomes. The reigning MVP dislocated his right knee on Thursday Night Football. So devastating for the league, him and the Chiefs as well. Can they continue to win with Matt Moore in the game at quarterback? And the Astros one win away from returning to the World Series. It's going to be James Paxton, the ex-Mariner, on the mound versus Justin Verlander tonight. They have a 3-1 series lead, though. The Astros do. Can they seal it in New York tonight? All ahead in this hour. Right now, let's get to your headlines. Well, a couple players still sidelined yesterday at Seahawks practice. Will Dissly is the one that you could have assumed. Yep, you knew that. Dwayne Brown, though, did not practice. Lano Hill did not practice for the second day in a row. Same as Bradley McDougal, Ziggy Ansah, both still sidelined. KJ Wright was a full participant after being sidelined the day before. And DJ Fluker back in limited participation, which is good news for that offensive line, which is it's been, you know, missing some people as of late. Tyler Lockett, also a full participant, and Chris Carson as well. Both of those were non-injury related. And then Quentin Jefferson popping up on the injury report with an oblique issue, was a limited participant yesterday. Now looking ahead to this matchup with the Ravens, how do these two teams match up against each other? Let's start with offense. Russell Wilson saying there's a lot of similarities between these two offenses.
We got a lot of similarities. I think that, you know, in terms of the Ravens and us, I think, you know, like I said, I think it's special teams, offense, defense. You know, it's all three phases, and great players across the board. You know, two aggressive teams, you know, just going after it, and it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a great matchup, and, you know, got great coaches, you know, and the two coaches, and yeah, so it's going to be a good game.
Right now, Russell saying he's processing things really quickly and thriving under the pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you try to, you know, process things really quickly. I think the more studying you do, the just the, you know, I think that, I've always liked pressure. I don't mind pressure when teams bring pressure, to be honest with you. You know, a lot of green grass behind a lot of things. They miss a tackle, you know, whether it's short down the field, whatever, it could be a touchdown. So, I think that's something that I've always tried to pride myself on, is being ready for pressure and the protections of it all and something like that. So I think that, you know, I think that's something that you always just that, – that's where the studying is so important, just trying to figure out what teams are doing and when they're going to try to do it and different scenarios.
Russ also saying that he loves to be challenged every single day by his offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer. How does Schottie do that every day to make sure Russ is growing?
Number one, he's such a great competitor. I think I always try to find things that maybe he didn't do well the day before and point those out to him a little bit at different times. It's hard to find each day, but holding him accountable. You know, he wants to be pushed. He wants to be great. And so he and I have a great relationship. I'm able to challenge him on decisions or reads or, hey, why'd you do that? And sometimes he'll push back, and then we'll kind of talk it through. But I just enjoy coaching him. He's really a terrific competitor. And so point out some of his strengths and weaknesses. Like last game, he had another one that late in the game that he pulled down in the four-minute situation. I said, hey, man, we've kind of seen this movie before, right, where you pull the ball and don't make much happen. Stuff like that's always fun.
Brian Schottenheimer also saying that he and Russ grade every single play out and they review that. And then also on Sunday against the Browns, if you remember, the headset going out for a little while there and Russ calling his own plays and Brian Schottenheimer saying, you know, it's easy to trust Russell in those types of situations.
Again, when he's in the mode that he was in and he was feeling good, it's, hey, let go. Go, go, go. And then we were had a couple receivers ready to run the play in. So you have that as a backup plan. But, again, he was mixing it up nice, which was great. Yeah, sometimes you worry about guys getting in there and doing nothing but throwing it. They're quarterbacks, right? So that's what they want to do. But he mixed it in nice. He called a nice run for Chris that popped for a big play. That was his call. So, you know, it takes some pressure off me, too. Hey, Russ, you just want to take this thing? Go ahead, man.
Go for it, Russ. The good things happen. The touchdown to Jerron Brown there happening on that drive. So good things happening when Russ is in control. Brian Schottenheimer also commenting on how different the Ravens defense is from last year, how that factors into their game plan.
Yeah, a lot of the same things. Coach Martindale does a great job with the defense. A lot of the same things. The pieces are different, right? Earl's different than Weddle. You know, the up front guys are still really good players. The two inside interior guys, if there's two more stout guys in the league than Williams and Pierce, I think, they're going to be hard to find guys that are more stout than those guys against the run. But they have their own flavor with the new personalities and new players, but it's a lot of the same stuff that you saw last year.
Shoddy saying, though, they'll see a lot of blitzes this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see quite a few blitzes this weekend, and again, you know, they do a nice job of mixing it up. They'll play some coverage, but we expect to see quite a few pressures.
Although it's good news for Seattle, at least when it comes to Russell's performance under pressure, has the best quarterback passer rating under pressure, or at least versus the blitz with five pass rushers or more that the other team sending five or more. And Russell's great numbers against the blitz. How does Shoddy explain that?
Year two, comfort level with the protections and things that we're doing. Playing again with, you know, it's really cool to see these young receivers just grow. So some of it's him being really decisive with his reads, knowing where they're going to be. But a lot of it I would just think is year two, the protections he's run them again. Justin Britt does a great job at the line of scrimmage. He drives so much of it, so Russ is able to kind of go and play. And I would say that's the biggest thing. He's very decisive right now.
Russ's passer rating in those situations, 141.8. The next best quarterbacks behind him, Teddy Bridgewater at 128.7 and Philip Rivers at 126. So Russ even significantly like ahead of them there. Brian Schottenheimer talking too about some of those pieces that have stood in on the offensive line and made things happen, because Dwayne Brown, DJ Fluker been injured as of late. Ethan Posick heading to IR. He's been impressed with Jamarco Jones and George Fant standing in up front.
Big time. I mean, even going back with Jamarco the week before against the Rams Thursday night, getting pressed into duty against the Rams. George going in, I mean, he played really well. Those two really good defensive ends we just played last week in Vernon and Miles. Both guys were really, 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 really good. Played at a very high level. And the cool thing is when Russ feels it. Like Russ said to me just the other day, he said, you know, man, Jamarco's playing really good football. I mean, that's saying a lot when your quarterback who's standing right back there a couple yards behind you is feeling that. So pleased with both of them.
The offense has been pretty productive this year. The defense has had more struggles. And Bobby Wagner speaking to that this week as well. They still have some things to improve on defense. This weekend, going against Lamar Jackson, going against Mark Ingram will be a great test for them.
I feel like we are closer than last year at this point. I feel like, you know, we have a lot of improvement to go. There has been some good games. There's been some not so good games. We had some games where we stopped the run. We had some games where we didn't. We had some games where we stopped the pass. We had some games where we didn't. And so I think the main thing is working on the consistency and, you know, doing it over a span of time would be the thing that I feel like we have to do better.
Game planning for Lamar Jackson, certainly a tricky one. He is a great improviser, according to Bobby Wagner. We know a quarterback like that here in Seattle.
He just knows how to get out of the pocket. He knows how to make people miss. It's plays where, you know, you think somebody got him. He stops on a dime, does a spin move, something. And it's just amazing, you know, to watch. But, you know, there's been a lot of spectacular runners. You just got to find a way to hit them. And so that's what we're going to try to do.
Also, a pretty spectacular runner would be Mark Ingram, one of the more physical runners in the NFL, according to Bobby.
I mean, he definitely brings it, I feel like. He's definitely one of the more physical runners You know, he brings it every single play. You match him with Lamar, and, you know, they have a couple other backs in there. So I think that's their whole point in the way that they run the ball. They want to just keep pounding and pounding and pounding until, like, maybe second or third quarter. They think you're tired, and then they break off a long run. I feel like we look forward to it. It's a challenge. I love playing teams that run. Maybe not these different exotic runs. It would be nice to just have you come straight at me. But it's always cool to play a running team because it's you know, kind of back like the old days, is who can find the ball.
The pass rush, Pete Carroll had said earlier in the week, is still looking to get things together, not as productive and where they want to be. Ken Norton Jr., defensive coordinator for the Hawks, speaking to that this week as well and talking about Jaron Reed, having him back well. It'll be a big boost for them.
Amazing. Getting a guy like that back, knowing the impact he has on the game, the impact he has on other players, is very strong. So getting him back is really really boost for big boost for us.
Also on how he has looked so far in practice.
Well, he looks the way a football player is supposed to look. Seeing his you know, just seeing his joy to be back. You know, he really missed the fellas. He really missed the game. I think he sees the type of impact he had on others. So he got a standing ovation when he came into the room. You know, he was very excited. And I think now it's about getting back to work. He's, you know, he's a really, really impactful physical football player. And we're certainly great to have him back. Feel great about it.
What is the most important matchup that's going to take place out on the field on Sunday? That's what I'm going to ask Danny O'Neill next on the Blitz. Plus, maybe a question about Oregon. He's going to go to that game on Saturday. What do the Dogs need to do to beat the Ducks? It's next on the Blitz right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is the Blitz.
Welcome back to the Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you. Friday, October 18th, just 2 days away from the Ravens coming to town to face off against Russell Wilson, the leading MVP candidate, and your Seattle Seahawks. Danny O'Neill joining us right now. Danny, my friend, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Lydia?
I'm good. This is an exciting weekend. I don't know if I've remembered being as excited for the UW game as I am the Seahawks game on the same weekend. And this feels like energy-wise, excitement-wise, it's going to be high blood pressure.
It has gone from an Oregon became a weekend. It's not that I dreaded it because I really wanted and was really into the idea that the streak was going to end. But there's a different enthusiasm going into it, knowing how much better UW has played against them over the past three seasons, ending the streak. And really, their field goal, a very makeable field goal last season, away from having won three in a row. Oregon's good. I'm very interested to see how Washington goes up against that defense. Oregon's defense has only allowed 25 points over the past five games, but I think Washington will be the best test, and I really feel that Washington found something at halftime, that they found something that they can rely upon. I'm excited to see what's going to happen tomorrow.
It was interesting to hear some of the comments from Chris Peterson, who, of course, was a little tight-lipped about that, but saying Jacob Eason really fired everybody up at halftime, had a speech that got a lot of people excited. Do you think it takes getting into those situations, though, where you are down or you're just not doing well for him to have that attitude? Or can they come out from the gate? Can they come out when the score is 0-0 and have that attitude?
I think they need to come out from the jump. And I think it goes back to finding something that you believe in. And that's what I saw. Washington's offense for the first three and a half conference games didn't have an offense that they really believed in. Like that wasn't something they didn't have. They had back shoulder throws on the sideline to Aaron Fuller, and they had Richard Newton, I thought was pretty good, but he's been banged up.
They're doing wildcat all the time.
They get in the red zone and they just run out of gas. And I think they found something in the second half against Arizona. I think they found something that they believe in, and I think it's their quarterback. And I hope to see a lot more put on his plate this week against Oregon, because I believe he's ready for it. And if this team is going to go on offense, it's going to have to be with him and his arm. And Puka Nacua is a different receiver. I know. He's a different receiver than any of the other guys they have. So I'm pumped up to see it. I'm not taking anything. I'm going to chronically minimize Oregon. Like, that's just how it's going to be. But I honestly feel I'm excited to see how Washington responds to this challenge.
I would agree. I think they are going to rise to the occasion. I think sometimes they play down if they think that they are, you know, going to just easily roll over an opponent. So I think they rise to the occasion often. I'll be excited to see this on Saturday. Now on Sunday, how about the Ravens coming to town? There's a lot of storylines, great ones in this. There's comparisons between Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. There's the return of Earl Thomas. What storyline has really stood out to you?
That it's two teams who have been known for their defense over the past decade who are among the better offensive teams in the league
yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
It's very strange. There's four teams that have scored 20 or more points in every game they've played this season, and these are two of them. That's a weird fact. I don't think anybody would anticipate that because these two teams are what they're built around. It's two of the three most rush heavy teams. The 49ers have the second most rush attempts, but the Ravens are one and the Seahawks are three. Two teams with mobile quarterbacks who don't fit the prototypical passer mode. Yet these are two of the more consistent offenses in the league. And so when it comes to that, I think that defenses are going to decide it, right? Which team decides to show up and play some defense?
If you buy into DVOA at all, people out there, Seattle, number three in offensive DVOA, and Baltimore, four. So right there within each other. And then defense-wise, Seattle's 18th and Baltimore is 22nd. So Seattle just having the slight edge, 7th overall, Baltimore 9th overall. But yeah, it is interesting that the identity has shifted. The problem is, you wrote a great article about this a little while ago. Is Pete Carroll still playing like they are a great defensive team, or are they going to start and shift and focus on the fact that their strength is offense right now?
Pete's not changing his philosophy. And so for me, that becomes a matter of, does the defense catch up? I think it's reasonable to expect the defense to get better over the course of the season. I don't know if they're going to get good enough to make the way Pete plays games. I if there's one thing I could change, when he gets within 10 yards of midfield, or when once he crosses midfield, I'll just settle for that. Once he crosses midfield, he should almost never punt.
Go for it.
Once he crosses midfield, he should almost never punt. If that happened, I would think that we might be dealing with a sea change in the way he sees his team. He loves playing field position football. And maybe Seattle's defense will catch up to the point that they can play field position football, but that hasn't been the case. Each of these teams are allowing an average of more than 6 yards per play, which is wild. You would not expect that at all.
What is the most important position battle, you think, on Sunday, that one you'll have your eye on?
I think it's going to be Earl versus Russ, and partly because I'm just so interested. It's two guys that have practiced against each other a lot. Earl plays the one position where you are allowed to kind of read a guy's eyes. He's got freedom. He loves to play hunches. I'm really interested to see how that will play itself out.
I love it. Yeah, you can't. That even before the game will be interesting. How Earl interacts with former teammates and coaches. I would imagine that he's going to get a lot of cheers on Sunday, but I could be proven wrong. I don't know.
Everybody's going to love him. If you got an Earl Thomas jersey, you should break it out and wear it, right?
It.
It's a Seahawks jersey, but you show some honor, show some respect to one of the greats.
Do it. Why not? Danny, as always, great to hear from you and excited for this weekend of football. You're going to be in town for it, so it's
going to
be great.
I am. I'm leaving this afternoon, so I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see you in a couple minutes.
Love it, Danny. Thank you. You can listen to Danny at 7 a.m. Danny and Gallant begins then, but first, up next on The Blitz, speaking of both UW and the Seahawks, Ben Burkervin joining Bob, Danny, or Dave, and more yesterday, to chat about, well, both of those teams. It's next on The Blitz right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Blitz from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Welcome back to The Blitz at 6. Libby Cruz alongside with you Friday, October 18th. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Blue Friday. An exciting game for the Seahawks this weekend. Also, pretty good one for the Dogs. Homecoming weekend. Oregon going to be in town. Justin Herbert, Mario Cristobal facing off against them. Ben Burkervin, a good blend of both of those teams, sat down with Bob, Dave, and more yesterday to chat about, well, being in this linebacker core that is pretty darn dominant. What's it like to learn behind people like Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and Michael Kendricks?
Do you think long term, when you look back on your NFL career, that you could be on another team and probably starting at linebacker, but the quality of these three linebackers that you're playing behind, what you're learning is going to serve you well down the road? And I imagine you and Cody are great students and just biding your time.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I've had, you know, a lot of my friends like, well, don't you wish you went somewhere where, you know, maybe they were weak at linebacker and you'd have a chance to go? And obviously you want to play. But at the same time, in terms of, you know, having a long career and having the opportunities that, you know, I have to be at this organization, I mean, I think that there's more that I can learn, you know, from these guys for as long as they're playing than I probably could anywhere else in the league. I mean, I don't know where anywhere else where there's almost, you know, 30 years basically of NFL experience playing still in one room. So it's pretty remarkable to get to have, you know, Mike and Bobby and KJ, who are able to, you know, not only show it on the field, but, you know, anything. I mean, you know, I talk to KJ all the time about stuff off the field, just advice about whether it's taxes or housing or anything like that. I mean, they know more than I could ever imagine. I'm still just a kid, and they've been doing this for quite a long time now. So it's pretty special to be here.
You just touched on what I wanted to ask you, and that was
taxes.
That was set yeah. next after Cougs and the snow and stuff. But just if you were a question asker, if you were somebody that were picking the brains of Bobby and KJ, or if you were more of an observer where you just kind of sit back and watch how they did things, or maybe it's a mix
of both. I think, you know, in meetings and stuff like that, it's more of an observed thing. You don't want to get in the way of, you know, what's going on. But definitely in the locker room and off the field kind of stuff, anything like that, I have no problem. And they're super receptive to us coming up and asking questions. It's not a thing where it's like we just are supposed to be, you know, seen, not heard, or anything like that. So definitely you're going to pick and choose your moments. You don't want to interrupt something or anything like that. But if you have a question, you know, whether it's about ball or anything else, they're always willing to talk to us.
What's been the biggest adjustment for you? We often hear rookies talk about the speed of the game and, whoa, it's so much faster, and these are the best athletes at every spot. Is that as jarring as it is for some others?
I think it's just the level of preparation required. It's kind of what he was touching on, that in college you can get away with stuff, doing something a little bit wrong and still be right. In a way, where in here, it's like the difference between taking a block and shedding it front side or back side is the difference between a touchdown and nothing, where in college it's maybe one more yard. And so I think it's just the level of detail and preparation required to be successful the way you need to be on the field is just far and above anything you think you know in college. Because in college, you have I just got to work harder when I get the NFL. It's just a little bit more preparation, but it's a massive jump. I think it's a bigger jump than high school to college football.
Yeah. What about when you look at a guy, and now you got this guy, Lamar Jackson? I mean, you probably watched him in college too. I love watching him play, but looking at him on film, I mean, he's a huge nightmare. What are you guys seeing from them, and what kind of, I mean, are those guys as astonished as everyone? Because he's only played, 13, 14 games in the NFL.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty remarkable watching him on tape, some of the things he does. Obviously, he's a great runner, and, you know, everyone knows that, but I think the craziest thing is sometimes if you watch him throw the ball, never once looks like he's working hard, and he's throwing the ball harder than probably anyone we've seen on tape this year. So the skills that he has and the way that they've tailored their offense to work his skill set is pretty formidable. So you definitely – it's a game where you have to be very gap sound. It's almost like a college game, the way they're playing their offense. You know, it's stuff that I used to see, you know, week in, week out in the Pac-12, and it's unique to see at this level because the NFL, you really don't see the kind of stuff they're doing. So it becomes – you know, a game of just understanding really gap sound football and having to understand that he's going to make plays. I mean, he's a dynamic athlete. He's been tearing it up, you know, last year and this year. So just one of those games where you're playing a guy that's in the NFL for a reason. He's a starting quarterback for a reason. So somebody's got to be better. And at the end of the day, hopefully we can make more plays than he can.
Hey, Ben, I'm a little gun-shy about asking this next question for fear that Maura might enter with a buzzer here, probably on behalf of the listeners, but it's Oregon week.
Okay.
It's Husky Duck week. What was that like for you playing at Washington when you faced Oregon?
Yeah, you know, it's exciting. I think when I got to UW, I knew about Wazoo and the Apple Cup and all that. I didn't really know about Oregon coming from California, but once you get there, it's pretty clear, you know, you don't want to lose to those guys. And, you know, I lost twice. I won two, and definitely feels a lot better to beat Oregon than to be on the losing side of that. I can tell you, I mean, that's the taste I have in my mouth from last year is losing to them, unfortunately. So, you know, hopefully we'll go out, and thankfully it's at Husky Stadium, so we can go out there and hopefully get some work done.
You be there on the sideline on Saturday?
Probably not, just with the way our schedule works on Saturday. I don't think I can get over there.
I'm sure you're already doing this, but give Will our love and you know,
boy, what an optimistic guy he is.
Yeah,
pretty.
That was so disappointing.
Yeah.
Talking about Will Dissly, of course, but I know you guys are buddies, so tell him to hang in there.
I will.
Ben, it's good to talk to you, man, and thanks for shedding light on that Cougs offense for us.
I'll talk about that anytime.
Yeah.
More than happy to. More than happy to.
We'll listen to it at any time.
You're a nice kid, man. Thanks. No problem.
We appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
There you go. There's Ben Burkervin of your Seattle Seahawks spending a few minutes with us here and really dialing us in on what the Cougs do over and over and over.
You don't want to miss that full interview. It's available 710sports.com, where you can hear some discussion about the Huskies and the Cougs. Also, in a couple minutes, we'll have some discussion previews of those games for you this weekend. First, I wanted to talk about Earl Thomas coming back to CenturyLink on Sunday and his teammates having some thoughts on it. We heard from Pete Carroll earlier in the week. He said he's got a lot of love in his heart and doesn't hold anything against Earl. Earl talking about it as well, saying that he keeps in touch with teammates and has a great relationship with them, hoping to talk to some of them in the pregame. Russell Wilson speaking on it yesterday. First off, just the matchup on the field itself. He hates having to play against Earl.
I hate having to play Earl. You know, because you spent so much time together. You know, and you think about all the fun moments together and just everything else. It's been cool. You know, all the games we were able to find a way to win, and all the amazing plays he's made. He's as good as it gets. You know, we think about safeties. You know, to be honest with you, he's one of the top one, two, or three safeties to ever play the game, in my opinion. You know, and you think about guys. You know, you think about the, Palomalu's, you think about Ed Reed, you think about Earl, you think about Lott, too. He's an amazing player, you know, so there's been some great players, and he's one of those. So I love Earl as a person. I love him as a player, and I love him as a teammate. So
Russell also talking about how their families are still really close and they keep in touch, and that Earl just has an insane work ethic and preparation. It's just unrivaled. Bobby Wagner also talking about his former teammate yesterday as well. Was asked, does he think Earl Thomas has any regrets on the way and manner in which he left Seattle?
I don't know if he has any regrets. It's not necessarily something that I've like in-depthly talked to him about, but I think a visual of how tough the business could be sometimes. And, you know, it's hard to always put your feelings aside, because at the end of the day, when the business comes into play, it's not just you that's affected. It's your family. It's your, you know, imagine if you have, a little kid at home, son or daughter, and they love playing in Seattle. They love being in Seattle. They have all these friends in Seattle, and then Seattle cuts you, and you have to go to that little person and tell them you can't be with your friends anymore, and we can't live here anymore. We got to go somewhere else. That's a tough conversation to have. So I think a person being in that space, I understand the difficulties of the business. So I don't know if he regrets it or not, but I understand where he was coming from and how difficult that must have been to affect not only him but his family.
And what he will remember most about playing with Earl.
How fast he was able to get sideline to sideline. I don't think there's anybody that's, able to do some of the things that he did on the field. You know, he was a very, very special player. Understood the game of football really, really well. And, I know I played with one of the best, for sure.
Up next on the Blitz, we'll hear more on the Seahawks matchup, how their injury report spells out for the game on Sunday, and then also the Chiefs beating the Broncos last night on Thursday Night Football. But maybe the bigger headline, Patrick Mahomes going down after dislocating his right knee, and the Astros one win away from heading to their second World Series in 3 years, all ahead in the Hot List right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is The Blitz. It's time for The Hot List.
Holy mackerel!
The headlines for the day in sports every morning at 6:45.
Heck yes!
What are we missing here?
A full breakdown of the top stories of today on your morning drive.
Let's go!
It was big news earlier this week when the Rams added Jalen Ramsey. He was introduced, spoke to the media for the first time, also his head coach, on welcoming Jalen Ramsey with open arms down there in L.A.
It was good to be able to meet him. I mean, you can tell, really impressive person, really intelligent, smart, charismatic guy, got a lot of confidence. So that was what it came off. You know, that was really the first time we had met in person other than saying hello after a game or something like that. So he's picking things up quickly. You can see he just has a big picture understanding of football, and he loves it, and we're glad to have him here.
Also, his defensive coordinator, Wade Phillips, if Ramsey plays this weekend, he will make an immediate impact.
The good thing is, Jalen, from what we know about him already, is a real smart guy. So, even in the stuff he's done already, he's pretty quick on everything. So, if he does play, I think he can play with a bigger menu than a normal guy coming in would play with. So, that's a good thing.
Also talking about the difference that a player in general like him can make on defense.
If you're fortunate to have a lockdown type cornerback, you can help other guys more and rush more people, basically. So it gives you more versatility than you would normally have.
Of course, they are now without Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters, who will be in Seattle on said day playing for the Ravens. Jalen Ramsey also speaking what he needs to do to get himself ready to play.
When you're playing this game and you're trying to play it at an elite level, it's about comfort. You got to feel comfortable to go out there and perform at the best level that you can perform at to help the team. That's not just physically, but mentally as well. Try to feel as comfortable as I can so I can hopefully go out there and contribute to a team win come Sunday.
Jalen also talking about his situation in, we won't even get into Jacksonville, but wants to prove that he's the best corner in the game right now.
The best shutdown corner in the league. Am I right?
Oh, 100%. But, you know, you can't just make that statement. You got to go out there and prove it each time you go out there and perform on the field. I've done that in the past, and I plan on continuing to do that and helping this team win a lot of games, I hope.
Jalen also said that he's not currently worrying about his contract, just trying to concentrate on the right now.
I'm the best corner in the league. I feel I'll be the best corner in the league for years and years and years to come. I feel like that'll handle itself, man. That's all in God's timing. Right now, I'm just trying to play football. I'm just trying to help the team out as best as I can and get adjusted being out here in L.A.
His teammates happy, including on the other side of the ball. Todd Gurley said he's happy that he's there.
Trying to put things together, try to get back winning. And, I mean, obviously, Jalen's a great player, so excited to have him on the team and part of the Ram now.
The Chiefs snapped a two-game losing skid yesterday with a 30-6 stomping of the Denver Broncos, whose offense looks like it's having a tough time. Reigning MVP, though, that was the bigger news. Patrick Mahomes dislocating his right knee in a pileup near the goal line in the first half. Chiefs coach Andy Reid said after the game that he didn't know how serious Mahomes' injury was, but added that they're still optimistic. Here's Andy Reid on how Mahomes was doing yesterday.
He's in a good place. I mean, he was in a good place on the field when it happened. Our doc was phenomenal in just calming everything down. You know, Dr. Schreppel, he just kind of calmed the storm right there, and Pat was good, felt very comfortable with him. He refused to get in that cart.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible to see his toughness. Andy Reid also saying the team didn't stop playing after Mahomes went down. Backup Matt Moore standing in for him through a 57-yard touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs collected 9 sacks, so the defense really showing up yesterday as well. Gave up a season-low 71 yards rushing and beat the Broncos for the 8th straight time. Now, was that due to the fact that the Broncos' offense was just so terrible, or was the Chiefs' defense just playing on the next level? Maybe a little bit of both yesterday. Mahomes completed 10 of 11 passes for 76 yards and a touchdown before getting injured on a successful sneak on 4th and inches at the Denver 5 early in the second quarter. Will that change how they play call for him in the future? Maybe no more quarterback sneaks? I don't know. Chiefs medical personnel appeared to pop Mahomes' right knee back into place before he was helped from the field, taken into the locker room. Before he got hurt, Mahomes became the fastest player in NFL history to throw for 7,500 yards in just his 25th game. Obviously, incredibly important to that team, incredibly fun to watch, and important to the league, the face of the league for a lot of people. So really upsetting injury to him. They are optimistic at this time, though. Adam Schefter said this morning that he will miss at least 3 weeks. Here was Schefter speaking about the Mahomes injury this morning.
It was good to be able to meet him.
No, Sean, it's not you. It's not your turn. Adam Schefter on Mahomes' injury and him missing at least 3 weeks.
Going into that MRI, the Chiefs believe that the best case scenario is at least 3 weeks. So no matter what, Patrick Mahomes is going to miss the next 3 games against the Packers, Vikings, and Titans. And then you hope that the MRI shows something that gives them hope that he'll be able to be back sooner than that. If it shows that there's ligament damage and he needs surgery, his season is going to be over. So this is a critical MRI that's going to take place.
Yeah, and Adam Schefter saying again that they remain optimistic at this point.
Patrick Mahomes himself tweeted last night, "Everything looks good so far." His exact words, "so far," is the key phrase in that expression that tells you that they're encouraged by what they've seen from that injury last night, but still are waiting to get the full story from the MRI that'll be conducted today that'll tell the story about whether Patrick Mahomes misses 3 or so weeks or misses the rest of the season and obviously changes the balance of football.
I think also it would be a scary thing. He's clearly an investment for the future. If they do decide to have him play this year, and there is a risk of re-injuring if you wait on surgery. So hopefully all good things and recovery, speedy recovery for Patrick Mahomes. A day after game 4
of the ALCS was delayed by rain. The Astros beat the Yankees 8-3 Thursday night to take a 3-1 lead in that series. The Astros are now one game away from reaching their second World Series in 3 years. And man, is that team fun to watch? They just are. I know. It's hard to admit if you're an AL West other team fan like you are Mariners fans, but still, absolutely dynamic on offense and their pitching. Even though Zach Greinke struggled early on, the offense coming alive and helping dig him out. Houston still, by the way, has Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole queued up for the series. The Yankees will have to beat both of those to survive. Verlander will start today against James Paxton, the former Mariner, who was actually speaking a day ago about how different it is pitching in the postseason.
It was good to be able to meet him.
Oh my gosh, Sean will not stop trying to talk during this segment. James Paxton, how different it is to pitch in the postseason?
There's a higher intensity, you know, but overall it's the same game. You have to treat it the same way. It's just being able to mentally treat it the same way, even though there is that extra intensity and you know what we're playing for, you know. But ultimately, if you can play the game the same way you did in the regular season, you're going to have the most success.
George Springer and Carlos Correa each hitting 3-run home runs yesterday. Pretty remarkable considering they have combined for just 5 hits in the series. But 4 of them have been home runs, so not bad ratio there. George Springer on the mentality of their offense.
We try to pass the baton. It's an offense where it's not about individual anything. It's about what's best for the team, and it's do anything that you possibly can to get the baton onto the next guy. I don't think there's anybody in our lineup who cares what position that they're hitting in. Just because you're hitting 5th or 8th or 9th or 1st, it doesn't really mean much. It's an awesome thing to be part of, just guys just wanting to pass the baton onto the next one.
Also, the Yankees crowd turning on their own team yesterday. DJ LeMahieu booting 2 ground balls. Gleyber Torres made 2 errors at second. Reliever Adam Ottavino, who was booed off the mound already in the series, was pulled before getting an out for the 4th time in 7 appearances this postseason. So the crowd reacting yesterday, and George Springer on silencing Yankee Stadium. It wasn't even silencing. They just turned the tide to having them boo their own team.
It's actually a really eerie sound. This is one of the hardest places to play in sports. I mean, it's loud. It's electric. It's a tough atmosphere to play in for anybody. So, you know, for us to come up right there with some big swings is huge.
Earlier in the day, Astros manager A.J. Hinch denied that his team had skirted rules to steal signs after an allegation by the Yankees, which was investigated and cleared by Major League Baseball, the whistling controversy. A.J. Hinch on that.
Man, I'm glad you asked that question. And I thought it would come up today. In reality, it's a joke. You know, Major League Baseball does a lot to ensure the fairness. You know, when I get contacted about some questions about whistling, it made me laugh because it's ridiculous. To the Yankees, you know, there's nothing bad going on. Pitch tipping is a little bit of a different story. If you don't want us to know the pitch is coming, don't do something that demonstrates what pitch you're going to pitch or what you're going to throw. But they're doing the same thing.
Yeah, he also made it clear if you're tipping your pitches, they're going to take advantage. That's just what happens. CeCe Sabathia, pitching in relief for New York, was pulled with a left shoulder injury during the 8th inning and what could very well be his final time on the mound.
Donahue and Boone are still on the field as CeCe throws a pitch. And no, they're going to have to take him out. I think it's the knee again. The way that he landed, it just didn't look right. Sabathia walking off the field in what very well could be the last time we see him in a big league ball game. And it's unfortunate, given the career that he's had, that this is the way it could end.
And also up next, it would be Paxton on the mound. Said he watched tape from his game to start. Insists he wasn't tipping his pitches, but Houston grinded him out of the game after 2 1/3 innings. So he'll look to bounce back. Verlander, meanwhile, pitched 2-run ball into the 7th. His only damage coming on Aaron Judge's 2-run home run. So big matchup for both these teams tonight at Yankee Stadium. Also this weekend, speaking of big matchups, the Washington football team returns to Husky Stadium for a homecoming game versus Oregon, the 112th all-time game between these two teams. Kickoff will be at 12:30 p.m., and the game will air on ABC television. Oregon coming in at number 12 in both the latest AP Top 25 and in the coaches poll, while Washington return to both rankings after a week out at number 25 AP and number 23 coaches. But a chance to move up that list if they, in fact, are able to beat the Ducks this weekend. Washington State, meanwhile, hosts Colorado Saturday at 4 p.m. That's when it's going to be on ESPNU for homecoming weekend. And the Cougars have won 3 of their last 4 meetings with the Buffaloes, including the last two, evening the all-time series at 6-6 between these two teams after posting a 31-7 victory in Boulder last season. Also this weekend, if you couldn't get enough of football, Seattle Seahawks taking on the Baltimore Ravens. We got the latest injury report yesterday. Dwayne Brown still sidelined, did not practice. Neither did Lano Hill or Bradley McDougal. DJ Fluker was a limited participant, so working back in. Ziggy Ansah sidelined for the second day. And Tyler Lockett and Chris Carson both full participants after being limited the day before, but not injury-related for them. How do these two teams match up? Let's start with the offense. Russell Wilson saying there's a lot of similarities between the Hawks and the Ravens.
Yeah, I think we got a lot of similarities. I think that, you know, in terms of the Ravens and us, I think, you know, like I said, I think it's special teams, offense, defense. You know, it's all three phases and great players across the board, you know, two aggressive teams, you know, just going after it. And it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a great matchup and, you know, got great coaches, you know, and the two coaches. And, yeah, so it's going to be a good game.
Game planning for the Ravens defense, they've usually been, you know, very strong in that category, kind of slipping this year. But Brian Schottenheimer on how different the Ravens defense is from last year.
Yeah, a lot of the same things. Coach Martindale does a great job with the defense. A lot of the same things. The pieces are different, right? Earl's different than Weddle, you know. The up front guys are still really good players. The two inside interior guys, if there's two more stout guys in the league than Williams and Pierce, I think, they're going to be hard to find guys that are more stout than those guys against the run. But they have their own flavor with the new personalities and new players, but it's a lot of the same stuff that you saw last year.
On defense, Bobby Wagner admitting they still have some things to improve on, and this weekend will be a great challenge because they'll have to contain Lamar Jackson, who is a great improviser.
He just knows how to get out of the pocket. He knows how to make people miss. It's plays where, you think somebody got him. He stops on a dime, does a spin move, something, and it's just amazing, you know, to watch. But, you know, it's been a lot of spectacular runners. You just got to find a way to hit them. So that's what we're going to try to do.
And another team with a pretty impressive run game, Mark Ingram being a huge part of it. They will get a boost because Jaron Reed is back this week. Ken Norton Jr. commenting on that.
Amazing. Getting a guy like that back, knowing the impact he has on the game, the impact he has on other players, is very strong. So getting him back is really a big boost for us.
Ken Norton Jr. saying he has looked good in practice. He got a standing ovation when he came back into the room. And so they know how impactful he can be up front on the line for them. It's also the return of Earl Thomas. So many good storylines this weekend. More on all of these great games this weekend coming your way with Danny and Gallant. It's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.